Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking. It's called the Pathways to Work, but Martin, it's commonly known as JobBridge 2.0. Am I right?
Well, what I would call it is Pathways to Free Employment Pathways to Driving Wages Down, Tony.
That's just a cynic in you. But we're, speaking of cynics, we are delighted to be rejoined on the podcast by a fellow who's been here quite a bit, TD, PBP, Solidarity, and Eco-Socialist, Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you keeping?
I'm good. I'm very tired because we were in the Dáil till 3 a.m.
Yeah, it was half two last night when the Ciarán Cóirle knocked it on the head, I believe.
Yeah, it was after by the time... Yeah, so I'm pretty tired now, to be honest. Well, but I'm grand.
Well, look, thanks for doing this. And at least we know then that we can say that, well, you're working for your money, Paul. And this is the topic of the day. Can you give us your kind of overview, despite Martin's little summation? What's your view of the new Pathways to Work scheme? And, you know, even if you could, are there any good things you think about it?
No. First of all, So the Pathways to Work scheme is like a general strategy. If people remember, I mean, they reel out the same old hits. You know, back in the day, in the aftermath of the last crisis, you got mass unemployment. They had an action plan for jobs, and it all did different points they had to take off and so on. And the Pathways to Work scheme is basically that. It's the overall scheme. And then within it, there's something which is very clunkily called the Work Placement Experience Program, which I do think the government will regret calling it that, because it means that the name JobBridge 2.0 is going to stick, because that's what it is. And they haven't given people an alternative name to call it. So thanks a lot, government. We don't have to rebrand or rename the ScamBridge campaign as we have begun to redevelop it. But what that is, I mean, that's JobBridge. It really is. So the essence of it is that you will get €306 a week. It's for people who are currently unemployed, people on social welfare. So you get €306 a week, which if you're at the kind of top rate of social welfare or the regular rate of social welfare, you're on 203. So that means you are getting an extra €103 a week for working for 30 hours for an employer, which means it's 340 something. It's under 350 an hour that you're getting. One thing that's very important is that the employer pays absolutely nothing, zero, for you to participate,
No employer's PRSI, no pension contribution, nothing.
This is the heart of what the old JobBridge scheme was about. It had a kind of a dual purpose, I think, from the point of view of the actual plan of the government. One is to massage the unemployment figures. So you're on these schemes, we don't count you as unemployed anymore. Even though you're still getting paid by the state, the employer, you don't have any relationship with your boss. You know, in reality, you're still unemployed. We're just paying you in a different way to go and work for not much at all. And the second thing is to depress wages. And that's real. I mean, you know, if you think about anyone in work now, and let's say they're thinking that they should deserve a pay rise, they go to their employer and their employer can say, well, why would I pay you to do this extra work that you're doing when I can get someone to come in? And from my point of view, it's absolutely free. And it gets to the heart of, like, there was loads of propaganda from the government around the old JobBridge scheme. At some stage, they had some figure of 61% of people ending up in jobs and this kind of thing. But when it actually came out, the final kind of nail in the coffin was the internal audit, which showed that 1 in 5 people who worked for a JobBridge somewhere ended up with a job in that place. But the crucial point is that other surveys said just over 1 in 5 employers said that if JobBridge didn't exist, it would have created a job and employed someone. So basically, it didn't have any positive job creation thing. It just meant some people worked for free for 9 months and then ended up with the job that they could have just got at the start. So it's really dangerous in terms of the displacement of actual jobs, because the employer says, fine, I've got something that needs to be done for 6 months. I'll say it's a training scheme or a work placement experience program, as they say now, and I'll get someone to do it for free.
Just remind listeners, the living wage in Ireland is deemed at €12.30, I think, per hour, and it's about £492 a week, £492 a week. What was that figure you gave us, Paul, for this?
You get three just under 350 an hour. That's what you get extra.
I know, but the total you get is
306.
Okay, so it's almost
exactly minimum wage. If you do the maths on it, that's why they've come up with this. It's because it works out as 10-20, exactly minimum wage.
Which is also less than what the pandemic unemployment payment was launched at,
Exactly. And, you know, less than what they had basically to accept. And the other point is that employers are able to employ 10 people on the scheme at once, which means they can make a remarkable saving. They can potentially get up to 160,000 euros worth of free labor. So they get to employ people for 6 months instead of the old scheme was 9 months. It's 30 hours a week instead of the old scheme was 40 hours a week. And for now, they're saying it's not compulsory. And they're the differences. But they're creating 10,000 of these places. In total, JobBridge did somewhere between 35 and 40,000. I don't see that they're going to be getting people signing up for this. So I think the tendency will for this to become compulsory. I mean, in a certain way, they could have said, oh, JobBridge isn't compulsory. But if you didn't do it, you could lose your dole. You could be cut to a penalty rate of your dole. And I suspect that in a year's time, that's precisely where we're going to be in terms of this scheme.
The metric that they're trying to move is the unemployment register, Paul. That's the metric. That's the whole purpose of this, is to show that there are less people on the unemployment register. Now, when they had JobsBridge 1, they were forcing people out of social welfare and into precarious work, very, very precarious work. It doesn't benefit anybody. And the idea that bringing down the unemployment numbers is of benefit, that has to be costed. I mean, is it actually of benefit to anybody to have make work schemes that are paid for only by the state?
Yeah, not when they're just providing free labor to private employers who otherwise may be employing people.
Just going to interrupt your podcast there. This is us with the begging bowl. We have to come with the begging bowl because that's the only way we can keep this project going. The Tortoise Shack gives a lot of information to people. People see it as a public service, but we do need money to keep it going. Just a few things we've done this week. We had Sam McElwenny and we had Emma D'Souza on Sunday, where we had the best chat you're going to hear about the 12th, bonfires, burning flags. You're not going to have a conversation that good anywhere else. What do you think, Tony?
I wish we didn't have to do these pods or these plugs so often, Martin. That's what I wish. There are thousands of people listening and they see value in it, but we need people to actually go one step further and put their hands in their pockets and actually invest in it. I was thrilled the other day. I don't know if you saw Martin on social media, Anne-Marie Quilligan saying that she doesn't subscribe to the Tortoise Shack. She invests in it. And it meant the world to me because things like that, that's what it's about. We are literally hand to mouth. I mean, if we're going to talk in economic terms, Martin, we're in recession, mate.
If we were going to talk in economic terms, we wouldn't be doing this, Tony. Let's be quite honest about it.
That's the facts. And it's unfortunately, it is unviable, except for the fact that we bloody love doing it. And we love the fact, I mean, the listenership has grown exponentially over this entire period. We've put out an average of 14 podcasts a week. Now, I'd say 9 of them at least go out for free. A lot of them stay behind a paywall or whatever the situation is. But if you want us to keep going and having those conversations, it doesn't happen unless people support it. It has to be supported.
So before I let you go back to your podcast, this is it. patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Sign up. It's cheap as chips for what you're getting. It really is. Sorry for interrupting your podcast. We'll let you get back to it now.
Yeah, not when they're just providing free labor to private employers who otherwise may be employing people. And I think we are. I mean, the reason they're doing this is because we're facing a crisis of unemployment. The crisis of unemployment that we have now, which is particularly stark for young people, is going to continue. And that's the irony in the situation of the government and Varadkar in particular going on about the economy rising like a rocket at the same time as they're projecting very high levels of unemployment to continue for the next year. And it's going to re-raise the question that was posed clearly at the time of the last crisis, but it'll be posed even more sharply now, is okay, how about instead of the state compelling people or pressurizing people to go and work for free for private or almost for free for private sector employers, how about we actually employ people? How about we have job creation schemes on a massive scale, in particular in terms of green jobs? Let's create a national climate service. Let's have people out re-wetting bogs. Let's have people involved in afforestation, in retrofitting homes. Let's also create more care jobs in healthcare, in education, in nursing, jobs that are low carbon. You know, that if you want to actually deal with unemployment, let's actually create useful jobs that have a meaningful benefit to society and pay people a decent wage for doing it. It's a much, you know what I mean? It's a bit like with the housing crisis.
Well, like, I mean, it's I want to push in on that because we've spoken about in the program for government, this was actually in there. I think there was I think I'm right in saying, Anna, because I read the bloody document, there was a ton of stuff on in terms of, say, just transition job creation schemes and that. And surely this is the opportunity, Paul. And I mean, I actually called you an eco-socialist at the beginning. That's where the jobs are. The job creation is.
Exactly. But that's the thing. For all the talk, and for even in this state, all the talk of, kind of like hinting towards Keynesianism, you know, and you have a discussion globally taking place. You have the global minimum corporation tax rate, which this morning, Pascal Donohue was saying, no, we're going to join with Bermuda and the Cayman Islands and the rest and not signing up to it. It's, you know, a minimal, extremely inadequate thing. You know, there are significant infrastructural programs being brought out in the US, for example. They don't go anywhere near enough, far enough, et cetera, et cetera. I have lots of criticisms.
And they still bury the global south, by the way. So, you know, they don't go far enough, but at least we shouldn't be siding with the people who are, you know. Like, I thought, again, not having a go at Dave McWilliams, but the idea he said that we're not a tax haven kind of cracked me up. Like, it just cracked me up.
Absolutely. But the thing in Ireland is that, like, for all the various talk we've had, in reality, any of the schemes, if you look at where the money for the various COVID support schemes have gone, the overwhelming amount of the schemes are just about keeping the kind of current model of the capitalist economy on life support, you know, of keeping this business, they're not involved in, okay, we need a shift in terms of economic model. You know, we think we need an eco-socialist model. We need massive public investment in job creation. We need public ownership of the key sections of the economy. Those things, like, obviously, in terms of the nature of the government they have, but there isn't even a hint in that direction in reality. And instead, it's you know what I mean? They're rolling out the same sort of stuff that they did in the last crisis.
And to be honest, Paul, Varadkar, the people who Varadkar called early risers 2 years ago, are now being looked at as scroungers, and that they have to be forced back into work. This time around, this is not that these people were out of jobs. They were asked to stay home by the government to help in the national effort to quell a pandemic. And now the government is going to punish them for it. It wouldn't be accepted by business. It wouldn't be accepted by ISME or IBEC or any of those if they were punished, if their members were punished for having to close their businesses.
Can I push in, Martin? Sorry, I want to push in because I know this sounds really like I'm going to channel my inner Seamus Coffey. So bear with me, folks. Before the pandemic, they would say we had a higher level of jobless households than the EU average. And the idea was that schemes like this, to use that dreaded phrase, were labor activation mechanisms. Now, we know the social carnage that wrought on and how it homelessness was much worse following these things that happened. And there is a correlation between those, the things that happened there and how our homelessness got out of control at that stage. I will point to, though, my fear is here, we're talking about what they say, they're talking about long-term unemployed. Martin, you're saying, you know, they're punishing people who haven't got jobs. But again, channeling Seamus Coffey, he'll say pre-pandemic, we had these households that had no person earning in it. And, you know, and that is what these were targeted at. You know, I'm happy, shoot back, have a go at me, but I'm just telling you that that's how it's going to be structured.
I mean,
Can I just shoot back first?
Yeah,
that has come up quite a lot about homeless households, Tony. But what we have is a huge amount of lone parents and single parents who cannot get out to work because there isn't the childcare infrastructure there to allow them to work. So the figures are skewed by the way our social welfare system targets lone parents. Paul, sorry.
Yeah, you see, I think it reminds me of one of the other things, purposes of the last Jobbridge. It was part of an overall kind of ideological attack to say that unemployment is an individual problem rather than a social problem. You know, and that's part of the getting up, work for early, the welfare scroungers, welfare cheats, cheat us all. It's all part of this idea that if you're unemployed, it's your fault. If your neighbor's unemployed, it's their fault. And you have to remember, like, that wasn't an easy sell for the government in the last crisis, because everybody knew, you know, in a basic sense, it's the bankers and the bondholders that are responsible for the crisis. It's not an accident that unemployment exploded in the context of their bailout and so on. But here, in a way, they have an even more difficult job to try and convince people of that, because, well, it's very clear that this, like, massive pandemic happened and then entire industries had to be shut for public health reasons. That's why people are unemployed. But that is 100% what this is about. It's about, and it was a thing, actually, you know, that they even had some success in people internalizing that and people thinking it was their fault, as opposed to realizing, no, this is a social problem. It's not my fault individually. And the state and society as a whole has a responsibility to try to end the crisis of unemployment, that we need societal answers to these things, as opposed to kind of, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work for free for 6 months or 9 months. And that way you'll get yourself, you know, in the...
Well, I'm going to argue against myself from 2 minutes ago and tell you that pre-pandemic, we were approaching the definition of full employment.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were the fastest growing economy in Europe 2 years in a row. Even during the pandemic, we outstripped it. And again, a lot of those chickens are coming home to roost now when you see moves on a global scale to tackle tax avoidance and our tax codes, how they play into that. I do want to remind listeners about some of the things that these job activation schemes mean. Martin, you're right to point out single parents were absolutely the worst impacted. But there's also companies involved in this, private companies, Paul, that have been involved in this for quite a bit of time, that we actually even imported some from the UK. And I was telling the guys earlier about an example of an individual who had osteoarthritis, a colostomy bag, an enlarged prostate, and was assessed fit for work. I mean, some of these companies are actually paid to place people in jobs to, as you said at the outset, Paul, dicky the figures on the unemployment register for people who the state should be supporting.
Exactly. And it's a huge issue. So the job path, which continues to operate, and like lots of people are pressured to go and engage with JobPath, is outsourced to private companies, CTEC and Turris Nua. They have incentives to, like, get people into some job as quick as they can, without anything it being suitable for them. It's going to be a good place to work, anything like that. They put huge pressure on people, create huge mental health problems for people, because you have this distorting impact of the profit motive. They're interested in ticking as many boxes as they can to maximize profit, as opposed to, you know, genuinely getting a good outcome for the person who is unemployed. And there's something which is kind of hidden in the fine print of the Pathways to Work scheme, where they talk about expanding the number of case officers. They say that with just over 1,000 case officers currently engaged directly or via contracted external service providers, blah, blah, blah. Then they go on about increasing the capacity of the case officers by 50%, which implies going from 1,000 case officers to 1,500 case officers. But then they say that we're going to assign an additional 150 directly employed case officers. So that means that they're going to have 500 extra case officers, and the majority of those, 350 of those, are going to be not public servants, not people employed by the state, but instead they're going to outsource the monitoring and the implementation of this Jobbridge 2.0 to CTEC, Turris Nua, and to the other companies. And that is kind of a new and added twist of the knife in terms of this scheme versus the last one.
Unemployment for profit.
Yeah, I have to ask, though, and I mean, for me, the bigger question, and I've been raising this for a couple of years, as a metric to judge how your employment market is doing, or the unemployment register is not a good measure of your employment market. It's a very poor measure. And particularly we can see on a scheme like this that you can delve into the figures and you can see, is there any value added by doing this? Mm-hmm. Or is it value taken away? And it is value taken away. Reducing the numbers by putting people into precarious or short-term work isn't a benefit to the state. There's no payback for the money they're going to pay out to take these people off the unemployment register. It's money all one direction. And it just simply doesn't make sense, fiscal sense at all.
Yeah. And that's even like a number of different reports in relation to JobBridge One focused in on this question of dead weight. So the state is paying for stuff whereby the thing might happen anyway. You know, so the person who ends up with a job after 9 months of JobBridge, the state has paid for that. You know, the state has paid extra for that for 9 months, as well as the negative of the person not getting a job and not paying taxes and not money circulating the economy and so on. But then they get the job at the end of the 9 months and the state says, oh, that's a great success. This worked. And the figures indicate like a huge level of dead weight. And that's like, it's rife for very blatant abuse by the employers. I mean, people might remember, but some people won't. Some of the younger listeners won't remember some of the most outrageous JobBridge schemes. You know, there was like Subway employing sandwich artists, groceries employing deli assistants. You had one national chain of garages employing, I think it was 38 different people in different roles, saving a potential something like $500,000 over the course of the 9 months of JobBridge. You had all these things going on. And at the end, you had this Indicon report. And the Indicon report made 10 different recommendations. These are, if you ever do a JobBridge again, these are the 10 things you should do differently. There's a government commissioned report. And how many has the government taken on board with this? They've taken on board 3. They ignored 7 of the 10 of their own reports. You know what I mean? They commissioned this report. They said, we want to take this very seriously. We don't make the same mistakes again. And then they like look at the report and say, we're going to do the same things. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a complete... Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Martin.
It's a complete lack of imagination by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They
now hang on, I got to come in on that. It's not a lack of imagination. It like you got to look at the timing of this. Okay, we've had weeks of lobbyists saying we can't get people to go back to work because they're getting way too much
on the PUP.
Yeah, they're all sitting at home watching Netflix and
it's the new flat screen telly. You know?
Exactly. I know a person who has a white van, doesn't pay taxes, and has two plasma screen TVs. We are back into curtain twitcher, punching down rhetoric. And the state, you say, Martin, it's lazy. It's not. It's just the easy old tropes that they fall into. I would ask one question, Paul, because you're actually a legislator. Is there space for these types of schemes done well, or are there places that you know of where they do them well?
I think the key thing is there obviously is a space for on-the-job training. No question about that. But the key differentiation between like what is a fundamentally a workfare type of scheme and something that is, you know, a genuinely education on the job training is that you end up with a qualification at the end of it, you know? So like proper an apprenticeship scheme and expanding apprenticeship schemes, investing in apprenticeship schemes, which include classroom training, on the job training, etc. That's valuable. You know, you need to be able to walk away from these things more than putting on your CV that you work for free for this company for 6 months. You need to say, this is the qualification I have as a result of that. And that's like, that's a key distinction. But I would also say, like, you know, I when I've raised this with Micheál Martin this week, he has said, I'm a big fan of these sort of schemes. They work very well. And like, the truth is, like, the EU has pushed these sort of schemes. I remember when I was in the European Parliament, this was all the rage. But it is the same everywhere. Like, in Britain, there's a very bad example of it. And people like I, Daniel Blake, and things like that they're real horrific stories of these kind of policies taken to their full conclusion.
Britain have, like, some of the companies you mentioned that are now operating here have been sued. And people have been called into the House of Commons and these places to answer at committees for some of the things they did. People are dead, Paul.
Yeah,
people are dead who they literally forced into these situations. This is I know that's the far end of the stick, but how it's not far to get there. It's not hard to get there.
Oh no, and I remember when we dealt with genuinely with ScamBridge 1.0 campaigning against JobBridge 1.0. We dealt with like really hard cases of people who are in horrific circumstances. Like it is a situation, for example, that at an individual level is very rife for bullying and abuse, and obviously. Like bullying happens in a lot of workplaces. It's a key complaint that workers have is of management often treating people badly. But in a situation where you're there for 6 months, you're hoping to get good reports and everything, you're meant to be doing your work and everything, it's rife for abuse and really difficult situations for people. So
there's a huge contradiction at the heart of this, where Varadkar says the economy is going to take off like a rocket. Mm-hmm. Now, if the economy is going to take off like a rocket, then you don't need JobsBridge 2.
Yeah.
You don't need any of that. So either he has faith in what he's saying or he's spoofing, one or the other.
Yeah. And I think that's like, just like after the last crisis, their model for rebuilding is like on the basis of low wages, on the basis of semi-free labor. That's the thing. It's like the same logic of the PUP. You know, they say, oh, look how high the PUP is compared to other payments. But then, like, of course, the answer, go on.
If you were a young person in this country and you've been told, no, we won't do anything about rents. No, you will never be able to afford a house. No, if you get a full-time job, it's going to be precarious. And now they're saying, if you don't do all of the above, look, really sling your hook and go somewhere else. We don't want you. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line of what this is.
That is actually, Martin, you've struck upon it there. What, when you're saying that the economy is going to take off like a rocket and we're going to have this growth in unemployment and high unemployment, they've admitted that. They've literally said, here are the facts laid bare. It's a two-tier society. Mm-hmm. It's inequality. I remind people, despite what you hear, inequality rose in 2019, pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the few, like, bucking the trend of 17 years of reducing it since the global financial crisis. We were going the wrong way on inequality as we had the fastest growing economy in the EU. Okay, so if we have that, you now have a two-track system. What this sort of does is it actually hardwires it in. And that's where the pushback has to come. It has to come back. I noticed talk of a housing protest coming in I think it's September.
September, and then probably again either late September or early October.
Absolutely. But this is where we need people to be agitated, because what you touch upon is high rents, precarious work. I mean, I saw yesterday it was celebrated as good news that Irish REIT gave the management of 128 properties to Tua Housing, effectively the state. The returns on it are phenomenal. They're effectively trebling their money for nothing. So the crime is what's legal, as I say, over and over and over. And I know I've just gone on a rant, so I'll leave the floor to you lads, but this sort of stuff, this needs to be called out for what it is. They've told you, Martin, the economy's going to fly off, unemployment's going to stay high. That's an admission. Let's reframe that. You're now telling me you have a two-tier country, a two-tier society. Mm-hmm. That's what you've said.
And an important point is that this can't be allowed just to be an issue for the 10,000 people who are on it. It's an issue for all workers, you know, everyone who's unemployed, everyone who's a worker, because the impact of having such free labor schemes is negative for all workers. It's not just the people directly on it. If the person next to you is working for free, that is going to diminish your own working conditions. It's going to put extra pressure on other people who are unemployed. And it's why, like with the original ScamBridge campaign, we had quite successful involvement of a number of youth sections of different trade unions. There's some really good activists who were involved and pushing, and we did great exposés of all this horrific abuse that was taking place. And I think played a real role in discrediting that scheme and ultimately leading to its demise. But we need the same now. We need the trade unions to come out clearly and say, this scheme is a bad idea. It's a bad idea for our members. It's a bad idea for the unemployed. And instead, we need real job creation. And that brings me back to the point I was going to make about the housing thing, in the sense that, like, it's the same neoliberal and capitalist kind of method, that if we want to build housing, okay, what'll we do? We won't actually just go and build housing, you know, because that's like the obvious. It's too obvious. Instead, and there's no profit in it, instead, we will pay, you know, give money to cuckoo funds to go and buy up housing, and then we'll give them money to rent it off the mat, and then at the end of it they'll own it, or else we'll have tax incentives for developers to build houses, or else we'll have tax incentives for landlords. You know, you have to, in order to get something to happen, you have to incentivize people who are in it for profit to do it. And it's the same thing here. You know, instead of actually engaging in job creation, we're going to go and give free labor to employers, because that way they'll benefit and the person won't be on the unemployed. So it's, you know, there's a parallel kind of approach to it.
The one thing I'll take exception with, Paul, is you say incentive, but it's not. It's social welfare for employers. That's what it is.
Yeah.
They call it incentive.
It's corporate welfare.
But it's social welfare. Paul, thank you very much for coming on and having this discussion with us this morning. I'm quite sure there'll be more to come on this. It won't pass easy, and it won't. People do not like to have their labor given away for nothing. And if you work for nothing, you will never be out of a job. It's that simple. Thanks again, Paul.
Or you'll have a podcast.
Thank you very much.
Just a quick reminder, listeners, funnily enough, Paul, you're talking about that shortly. Once he doesn't bail again, Dara O'Brien, the Minister for Housing, shall be joining us. So we look forward to that. Back in your feeds shortly, guys, and hopefully some conflict with a small C, Martin. Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on